W260CV Racine and 98.1 FM W251BU Kenosha.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Stacy Lynn. The U.S. unleashed retaliatory airstrikes on Iranian-backed targets in Iraq and Syria in response to a drone strike that killed three U.S. service members last weekend. The BBC's Orla Guerin reports.
The American strikes did not involve the element of surprise. They were carefully calibrated and telegraphed in advance. There will be a response. The question is, at what level? The White House is expecting Tehran to be measured in its next moves. Neither side wants a major escalation, but some Iranian-backed militia groups in Iraq and Syria may act unilaterally.
California is drenched, already dealing with flooded roadways and standing water, and now more is on the way. Meteorologist Chris Warren from the Weather Channel with what they're in store for now.
Another strong storm moving into the West Coast, going to bring a lot of rain. If Los Angeles ends up getting 6 inches of rain, in addition to what happened over the past couple of days, this will end up being the wettest week, wettest 7-day period in almost 15 years, in part because of this. A strong atmospheric river, moisture pointed right into Southern California and Central California, bringing this tropical moisture up into the mountains, forced up, getting even more rain, possibly up to a foot of rain in some areas. That means there is a high risk for some life-threatening and damaging flooding. Not just a possibility, but it's likely on Sunday into Monday there will be flash flooding.
A jury is set to begin deliberating Monday in a landmark case. Jennifer Crumbly's the first parent of a school shooter to face criminal charges for her child's actions. She's charged with involuntary manslaughter after her son Ethan killed four students at his Michigan high school in 2021. Andres Gutierrez is with CBS Detroit.
The defense attorney Shannon Smith told the jury that she believes the shooter was an expert manipulator who hid his issues from his parents to get a gun. She also believes the prosecution presented weak evidence and that they had tunnel vision to get Jennifer Crumbly convicted.
The Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney Fannie Willis had a personal relationship with a special prosecutor that she hired for the election interference case against former President Trump. So what does this mean for the case? Legal analyst Jessica Levinson.
This is a great gift to the Trump campaign in terms of what they can say outside of the courtroom. But inside the courtroom, their defense can't be Fannie Willis hired her boyfriend. It has to be a different defense. That's not going to be a successful one inside the court.
And there are no grounds to dismiss the case or remove her from it. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Artificial intelligence could be used to meddle in this year's elections. As Eric Tegedoff reports, it could cause voters to mistrust all information, even the truth.
Before the New Hampshire primary, a robocall imitating President Joe Biden called voters and told them not to vote. It's seen as a potential preview of what voters could be in for as the 2024 general election approaches. Rachel Ori is the senior associate director of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Elections Project. She says AI could have other consequences.
Our bigger concern is what's known as a liar's dividend, that the presence of false information makes voters trust any information less.
Ori says the past few years have seen a near constant assault on accurate voting information, which has made it challenging for good information to reach voters. Ori says AI could supercharge the misinformation campaigns that have existed for years. However, election officials across the country have a leg up going into the 2024 vote.
Election officials and voting advocates around the country are sort of well prepared to mitigate and respond to increases in misinformation because they spent the last couple of years flexing that muscle and learning how to respond to misinformation and election denial campaigns.
Ori says election officials should have a plan ready to respond to AI misinformation campaigns. She says there likely aren't any regulatory options available at the moment to stop these operations.
Technology is maybe growing faster than the regulatory tools we have available. So at present, it seems difficult to find a policy that the government could adopt and make these robocalls impossible.
Ori says another concern is targeted campaigns that use a voter's personal information to persuade them not to vote, although there aren't any documented instances of this happening yet. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Becoming sunny by this afternoon, we'll see a high near 39. Partly cloudy tonight, 31. Becoming mostly sunny on your Sunday with a high near 40. Sunshine, 42 for Monday, 45 on Tuesday. And the warm-up continues, 49 Wednesday, 52 on Thursday.
Right now, 31 degrees.
News, talk, and the sports that made Wisconsin great. Packers, Bucks, and coming in 2024, the Brewers. 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Welcome back to the Todd Albaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, all across the state of Wisconsin, and all around the world, streaming on the Civic Media Radio Network app. I'm Trigvi Olson, standing in for Todd today. I'm joined on the board by Aaron Zomers, as my co-pilot, as just about every day is the case here. And I tell you what, this being my second time hosting a radio show, I'm really glad to have the best in the business, Aaron Zomers, helping me out. Now, speaking of some of the best in the business, we dedicated the first hour to talking about the Green Bay Packers. I'm a little bit like when Matt Damon took over Jimmy Kimmel's show, right? Here.
Just keep getting bumped.
I just dedicated it. Yeah, I kept getting bumped, and now I talk about the Packers when I take it over the first hour. Now, the second hour, I'm going to talk about one of my second favorite topics, one of my two favorite topics. I'm going to talk politics. I'm joined by Craig Gilbert, who I've known a long, long time. He used to be at the Journal Sentinel. He was my neighbor for a while in Arlington, Virginia. And he currently does work with the Marquette University poll. But more importantly, Craig, and I know you're on the road, Craig probably knows more than anyone I know about voting patterns in the state of Wisconsin. This is an important topic today because that impacts maps, and there's a little bit going on about maps. So, Craig, welcome to the Todd Albaugh Show.
Hey, it's great to be with you, and we've got a nice little window here before I have to get on a plane to Miami. So, happy days.
You are lucky to be going to Miami. The good news is, though, Charlie the Groundhog, or Freddie, or whatever his name is in Sun Prairie, did not see his shadow, so spring is coming early to the state of Wisconsin, which is an awesome thing.
I'm happy for all of you.
But it won't be as nice as it is in Miami. So Craig, I make the case all the time when I'm in my Lincoln Project hat on, when I'm talking to people around the country, that Wisconsin is going to be the state that decides the elections. Do you agree with me about that, that Wisconsin is going to be, really, Wisconsin and Michigan are going to decide where this thing goes at its most foundational?
Well, I mean, just about every measure you look at, Wisconsin is, at the top of the list of battleground states. It has literally been the mathematical tipping point state the last two presidential elections in 16 and 20, where it was the state that either party needed to get to 270. And so it doesn't get any more pivotal than that. It's the only state that's had, four fractional, less than 1 point elections for president in the last six cycles. So it's pretty unique. I mean, it's one of probably four states that's going to decide everything.
Yeah. So, and I look at this pretty closely too, right? Michigan and Wisconsin are so similar demographically. They're so similar, quite frankly, I think, in terms of values, probably closer than any other neighbor state to Wisconsin. But when you look at voting patterns and you think about, you wrote a great piece a while back in the Journal Sentinel about the sort of the suburban counties and the counties that have been changing in terms of how they vote. You know, which counties and which parts of the state of Wisconsin do you think are going to end up being pivotal in the race?
Yeah, so certainly the suburbs overall are kind of the battleground, because Democrats are really strong in the cities and Republicans are really strong in the towns and the countryside. But there's like this real diversity, politically speaking, across the suburban landscape in Wisconsin, where you've got the famously Republican WOW counties outside Milwaukee that have been getting less Republican. A lot of people live there. They're really important politically, and it's been a real drag on Republican statewide elections that they are losing some of their advantage there. You've got some really Democratic suburbs now outside of Madison and in the inner suburbs of Milwaukee, and they've been getting more Democratic, which is also helpful to the Democrats. And then you've got a lot of more purple suburbs, you know, particularly in the Fox Valley and the Green Bay area, also kind of toward the Twin Cities area, that are not like dramatically trending in one direction or another, but they are in of themselves battlegrounds.
Right. One of the things that jumped out at me, and you and I talked as you were working on that a little bit, particularly about my home area of St. Croix in the Twin Cities suburbs. One of the things that I've been spending a fair amount of time looking at is some of these counties like Eau Claire County, La Crosse County, places with universities. And I think it's kind of where the state politics around the University of Wisconsin system, public education, have been meeting actual voting results. Did you find anything as it relates to sort of once you get outside the big colleges, Milwaukee and Madison, differences in what's happening in those counties that those sort of UW system schools?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's happening, it's been happening in Wisconsin, which we should all be writing more about or paying more attention to, is like the polarization that's occurring even within smaller counties in Wisconsin. And one way that happens is you've got a campus town or a campus city in a county that's otherwise fairly rural, and the rural parts of that county are getting redder, and the hub of that county is getting bluer. So the campus dynamics, you know, is part of that story. It's also happening, you know, in places that have kind of blue collar cities as the hub in a rural county, or places that have, you know, resort kind of destination kind of towns. But it's kind of, you know, for a long time, you're used to thinking about the face of polarization in Wisconsin was kind of how Milwaukee was like veering apart from the WOW counties. But really, within a lot of smaller counties around the state, there's a widening gap between kind of a purple or blue community, hub community in that county, and then a lot of smaller red communities around it.
Yeah, I think, you know, so one of the things that from my place where I sit in sort of the thinking about votes and how you translate into votes, those counties like that, you've been mentioning the sort of purpleness that exists within them. One of the things that I think in some of those counties where you have the university, there's an assumption that it's just, okay, students, faculty, they're blue, the rural parts are becoming more red. But the interesting piece is that middle that's purple, which is like, you know, what used to be Chamber of Commerce Republicans. Sort of those pieces as those counties evolve, that is really kind of a change that's become the purple. It's a little bit like in Waukesha, you know, what used to be Republican women are now swing voters, right? Like,
yeah.
Is that's where the change is really happening. How much in the Marquette poll and the work that you do with the Marquette poll on Charles, how much are you seeing that dynamic play out? And where do you think that's going to play in the 2024 presidential in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly within the white part of the electorate, which is the overwhelming majority of voters in Wisconsin, there's an education divide, and there's, you know, non-college voters have been moving in a Republican direction and college voters have been moving in a Democratic direction. So that's a big part of all of this stuff we're talking about. You see that in the difference between kind of high education suburbs and more blue collar suburbs. They're going in different directions. So there's a lot going on there. It's not only education. It's other things as well. You know, people self-select in terms of the kind of community they want to live in. There's something called like the density divide, which even beyond education illustrates the fact that people in more densely populated communities are, you know, more to the left, and people in less densely populated communities are more to the right. And that gap is getting bigger. So you kind of see this across the landscape in Wisconsin, you know, in rural areas as well as suburban and urban areas.
And talk a little bit about, because I know you've written about this quite a bit, talk about how that impacts the current debate that's going on with the maps, right? Because the Democratic Party's expert yesterday was saying, oh, these maps are clearly gerrymandered and you're seeing this. And I think you've written about how there is gerrymandering in the maps, but that doesn't, it's not necessarily the panacea completely that Democrats think new maps would be. Right?
Yeah, so
like there's some imperfections.
One result of the density divide is that Democratic voters are more geographically concentrated. I mean, if you think about places like Madison and Milwaukee, you've got such concentration of Democratic voters that you have a lot of wards that are like 80 or 90% Democratic. And those voters are, you know, count just as much as everybody else in a statewide election. But in a district election, they're kind of wasted votes because you don't need to win that legislative district by 80 points. You only need to win it by 10. So the Republican vote is kind of more efficiently distributed. So that gives a natural geographic advantage to Republicans. Now, the maps we've had for the last 12 or 13 years have gone way beyond that natural advantage and given Republicans an even more lopsided advantage. And so now you have this interesting debate with these new maps over whether the final map should just sort of like reflect the Republicans' geographic edge that we've been talking about, or whether you can kind of equalize the two parties, even in legislative elections, while still kind of meeting all the other criteria of redistricting, like making compact districts and not splitting up too many communities. So the Democratic argument and the plans that are on the Democratic kind of progressive side, you know, claim to do that, that, hey, we know there's a geography here that's more favorable to Republicans, but you can create a level playing field without, you know, violating the law and creating crazy districts. The Republican argument is the map should reflect that geography. But, you know, of course, the recent Republican maps have gone beyond that geography and given Republicans an extra advantage.
So we have 2 minutes before the break. Tell me a little bit, or 1 minute before the break. Tell quick, what part of the states, the state of Wisconsin, where are those places where Democrats just organically, if you have fairer maps, can make gains?
Well, you can certainly, you know, if you look at the suburbs around Milwaukee, you know, Republicans have been moving some districts further west as they lose ground in the communities closer to Milwaukee in order to hang on to those districts. So if you kind of reverse that process, you can create more competitive suburban districts and districts that are winnable by Democrats by moving some of those districts, you know, back closer to Milwaukee County or straddle Milwaukee County. So that's one place where you see it. And there's other places where the current maps might break up a Democratic community in order to kind of dilute that vote into more than one district. And again, if you reverse that process, you can make a map that's better for Democrats, certainly.
I'm Trigvi Olson. You're listening to the Todd Abaw Show. We'll be right back with Craig Gilbert.
You're listening to News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN. It's fully leaded education talk. Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny. Weeknights at 7 on 99.9 and 98.1 FM and 1400 AM WRJN and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
The immigration challenge in this country, as Jorge Ramos, the great author, likes to say, you can build as many and high walls and deep walls as you possibly want. But until you start addressing the problem within countries, people will keep coming. For all of our faults, people still look at America as that shining city on a hill and want to come here, and I believe that makes us stronger.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Trigvi Olson, sitting in today for Todd Alba. We're joined by Craig Gilbert, formerly the political reporter, a political reporter for the Journal Sentinel, currently with the Marquette poll. And as I was saying before the break, Craig knows the state of Wisconsin and voting patterns as well as anybody I know, which, as Craig, as a former reporter, can tell you, the political guys are always enamored with those who can talk details of voting patterns. We were talking during the break a little bit, Craig, and I think it's an important point, that maps, really, fair maps in Wisconsin really start building out from Dane County. Do you want to touch on that just a little bit?
Yeah, because, I mean, Dane County is such a hub of Democratic voting power, and, of course, it's growing more than any other part of the state, so it's just become ever more important to the state. So, you know, if you're a Democrat and you're trying to build a map that reduces the Republican advantage, you have to kind of spread that Dane County vote out among more districts, including districts that extend into neighboring counties. And so that's what some of these maps do, that aspire to kind of partisan parity. And that's what the maps that retain a strong Republican advantage, you know, don't do and don't attempt to do. So that's gets to the importance of, you know, you can't ignore Dane County in this process.
So I want to pivot just a little bit, conversation, let listeners have a little bit of an insight into what happens when a political hack like me and a guy like you get together and drink a few beers or have lunch. We talk about things like, can anybody ever mirror what Tommy Thompson used to do in terms of voter percentages? I think in maybe it was when McCott 90, he got like 70% of the vote. Pretty close. 68.
In 94 was his peak election.
Yeah, was that? Was his, oh, yeah, it was 94. It was re-election. When McCaution ran it. Yeah.
So it was
70%. So, you know, I mean, what do you think is as these changes are occurring? You know, Gretchen Whitmer got 55% in Michigan, right? Like, I don't think anybody could get 70.
Right.
But is there space for somebody to run for governor as I'm going to be a cheerleader for the state of Wisconsin? And I don't, you know, Tommy was more of a tribal leader than a partisan leader. Do you think that that could happen? Like, as we look forward to 2026, depending on what happens nationally?
Well, I think it can happen to a degree. I mean, certainly not to the same degree. I mean, every party now, the two parties have higher floors and lower ceilings than they did back in the day because people aren't splitting their tickets and everything's more polarized. I was thinking about this when Herb Kohl passed away, and he, of course, famously carried Waukesha County in 2006, which, you know, which actually one day may become a possibility again for Democrats the way it's trending. But, you know, so it's, you don't want to make the mistake of completely discounting the ability of a good politician who takes a smart approach to kind of get out of this 50-50 box that everybody's been in. And, you know, we certainly saw, you know, the closest thing to a modern day landslide in Wisconsin in this era was Tammy Baldwin winning by 11 points in her 2018 Senate race. So that tells you, you know, again, she had a weak opponent. She had a lot of things going for her, but she did a lot of things right. And so that tells you that you can do better than a tiny, marginal, you know, nail-biting victory in this environment and in this landscape.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about this, right? Like my beer drinking buddies from St. Croix County, who I'm going to be out in Vegas with in a couple of weeks, they're all going to want to talk politics with me. And I'm pretty sure, you know, almost all of them voted for, they're Evers Johnson voters, right? But they all voted for Tammy. And I'm guessing most of them will vote for Tammy again. Some of them are probably thinking about voting for Trump. What is it about Tammy Baldwin in terms of her ability to connect, I mean, from your perspective, with some of these voters?
Yeah, I think for someone who's got on paper, you know, an identity that you'd think would prevent her from doing that. I mean, she's a Madison liberal. She's got one of the most liberal voting records.
She lives on the isthmus.
Yeah, in the U.S. Senate. But she's, you know, she's defined herself politically not on kind of hot button cultural issues, but she's been kind of one of sort of an old fashioned, you know, legislator, constituent service, parochial issues. She spent a lot of time outside the Democratic base areas of Milwaukee and Madison, you know, Derry. So, again, you mentioned Tommy Thompson. That was an element of Tommy Thompson's success. And she's been very effective. And some of it's just hard work. And some of it is just, again, doing work for constituents, for businesses in the state. And so I think that's clearly been a big part of her story. And you know, it's not something everybody tries to do or wants to do or can do.
We have a caller, and I want to take this because she wants to talk about Evers Johnson voters. And I know we're running into your flight. So, Camilla from Milwaukee, you have a question for Craig Gilbert about Evers Johnson voters.
Yeah, I ever since it happened.
And thanks for calling, by the way.
Of course. Ever since it happened, it perplexed me. I don't understand how something like that could happen, because I could understand if it were Evers Mandela, you know, on the ticket, or Johnson Michaels. But it just blew my mind that it came out that way. It shocked me, to be honest, and I still don't understand how something like that could happen.
That's a very good question. Go ahead, Greg.
So in this case, we're not talking about a lot of people. I mean, you know, Tony Evers won his race by 3.5 points, and Ron Johnson won his race by 1 point. So that's like a 4.5 point gap. So it was a very small percentage of the electorate that was splitting their tickets between those two offices. But it was a split outcome, which is very rare in Wisconsin. I mean, you can actually find a much bigger group of like cross-pressured voters. If you look at, for example, right now, the people that approve of Tony Evers and disapprove of Joe Biden, you know, two Democrats, that would be a pretty large number today. Even if you go back and look at the people that maybe voted for Scott Walker in 2014 and 2012 recall, but voted for Barack Obama in 2012, you know, that would be a significant number. So, you know, and then of course we famously have the biggest, the most oddest of odd couples in the Senate, ideologically speaking, in Ron Johnson and Tammy Baldwin. And so that tells you that at least some people have voted for both of those, not on the same ballot, but in different years. So I think it just is, it's a reminder that not everybody is 100% entrenched in their partisan identity, and swing voters exist. There are more of them in some parts of the state than other parts, but they do exist, and a smart politician understands that.
Well, I think it also gets to sort of the uniqueness of Wisconsin, right? There are only 4 or 5 states that have split delegations in the U.S.
Right.
Senate, Republican, Democrat.
And there are going to be fewer after this cycle.
Yeah, there are. And here's the thing, though, there's and we're running up against a break here, and I know you got to get on an airplane. But, you know, Wisconsin has a tradition of that. I mean, at one point you had Bob Kasten and Bill Proxmeyer in the U.S.
Yep.
Senate, right, from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Wisconsin is still a little bit more traditional in some ways than other states in terms of how that has unfolded. Well,
yeah,
Greg,
go ahead.
You
have to be a competitive state for that to happen, too, which we are.
Yes. Oh, we have 3 minutes left. I missed
30 seconds.
Oh, 30 seconds. Oh, 30 seconds. All right. Well, Craig, good luck on the flight. Thank you so much for joining us. I know this has been fascinating. I hope Todd has you back on. I know he's talked about that. This is the Todd Abba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Trigvi Olson. We'll be right back.
down on your radio dial.
And home of the Packers.
1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
CBS News Brief. The U.S. military began an air assault on dozens of sites in Iraq and Syria in retaliation for the drone strike that killed three U.S. troops in Jordan last weekend. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
These targets were carefully selected to avoid civilian casualties and based on a clear, irrefutable evidence that they were connected to attacks on U.S. personnel in the region.
Up to 6 inches of snow in parts of Arizona.
Like, we used to go swimming on Christmas Eve and all of that in like 80-degree beach water. So this is probably the first time I've actually seen a snowstorm ever.
On Monday, a jury is set to begin deliberating whether the mom of a convicted school shooter should face criminal charges for her child's actions.
Jurors will be back here on Monday to begin deliberations. Now, if convicted on all four counts, Crumley faces a maximum of 60 years in prison.
CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
The Brewers mega trade. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers traded their ace pitcher, Corbin Burns, Thursday night to the Baltimore Orioles for two players and a pick in the upcoming draft. The veteran pitcher was still upset after a team rep in a salary arbitration hearing last year claimed that Burns was the reason the team didn't reach the playoffs in 2022.
You know, it's obviously tough to hear, it's tough to take, but, you know, they're trying to do what they can to win a hearing. But I think there was obviously other ways that they could have gone about it.
Nevertheless, he recently signed an extension with the crew through this year. So why trade him to Baltimore? General Manager Matt Arnold.
Look, anytime you trade a guy like Corbin, it's always a difficult decision. I think the overarching theme here is that we're excited about the players we're getting back. And the reality of our situation is that we had 1 year left with Corbin. I think Corbin had been pretty public about how this was going to be his last year as a Brewer.
That's the Brewers' Matt Arnold. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Becoming sunny by this afternoon, we'll see a high near 39. Partly cloudy tonight, 31. Becoming mostly sunny on your Sunday with a high near 40. Sunshine, 42 for Monday, 45 on Tuesday. And the warm-up continues, 49 Wednesday, 52 on Thursday.
Right now, 31 degrees.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matt and Air on Air with Jane Matt and Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on 99.9 and 98.1 FM and 1400 AM WRJN and on the Civic Media app.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
The Todd Allbus Show.
You look at Taylor Swift, she fought off the bitterness of defeat when she lost her records, when she was kind of duped by a manager. People who told her she'd never amount to anything. But it doesn't matter if you like her music or not. I'm a fan of anyone. Doesn't matter whether they're an artist or an athlete or just a common Jane or Joe. If you've overcome something in your life, you're a winner. If you've made it through, that's what it's all about.
The Todd Allbus Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. app.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcast.
When you think about it, talk radio is its own type of sport. News Talk and Sports, 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Then put your little hand in mine. There ain't no hill or mountain we can't climb.
Welcome back to the Todd Aubaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Trigvi Olson, sitting in for Todd Aubaugh today. And I have on the board Mr. Aaron Zomers, that was the Bob Dylan version of I Got You, Babe. Who else did that? Do you know that?
Well, this was the Sonny and Cher.
Sonny and Cher? But I think Dylan did it originally, didn't he?
I do not remember, honestly.
Am I wrong about that? All right, so I'm gonna share with you, as all of you who listen on Hump Day on Wednesdays know, my favorite hour professionally of the week is when I get to go on the Todd Aubaugh Show and talk Wisconsin with Mr. Zomers and Todd. But what many of you don't know is that Mr. Zomers and I share a love of all kinds of music. And every once in a while, Aaron is trying with the songs when I am on, playing as lead-ins, playing with me in different ways, whether it's Katy Perry or things, Taylor Swift or whatever.
That's because it's Groundhog Day. Yeah,
it is Groundhog's Day. And in fact, I think at some point we might even have a little Bill Murray for listeners. Before I go to Mark from the SAC to talk maps, I want to touch on what Camilla was saying from Milwaukee about Evers Johnson voters. And I knew we had limited time with Craig. And I wanted to make sure that you guys got plenty of Craig's understanding of the maps. Isn't that amazing, Aaron? Like he knows that stuff just inside and out.
Yeah, definitely. You can tell that he spends a lot of time surrounded by that kind of information.
Yeah, so you know, guys who run campaigns fancy themselves as knowing that stuff better than anyone. And obviously, in my own case, having worked on a lot of campaigns in Wisconsin, you know, it's like you have to know it. The thing that you're always fascinated by and like is when you run into reporters and people outside of the business who know it as well or better than you do. And that is the reason why I wanted to invite Craig on. Because quite frankly, when it comes to understanding of the maps, like he lives it, and then he's doing the journal, the Marquette poll, so he understands the polling side, which is sort of kind of my part of the political orbit.
Yeah, it was really similar when we had Patrick Marley of the Washington Post on to talk about when this lawsuit first was going through. It was about the fake electors. That's what it was about. And yeah, when that lawsuit was settled. And interesting note, also used to work at the Journal Sentinel. Seems they've crafted a lot of excellent reporters or found,
yeah,
I guess.
So I've known Patrick for quite a while. In fact, I saw Patrick when I was in Madison. That's a huge score for the Washington Post that they brought Patrick in to do Wisconsin and Michigan. I would also say, you know, for as much grief as is given, particularly on the right, to media organizations like the Washington Post, people like Patrick and Craig, I mean, they're serious reporters. And it kind of gets into what I was talking with Ty about. You know, you learn pretty fast in politics who are the reporters who are real reporters and who are the ones that are just trying to throw out stuff that's going to get clicks and is going to be popular. And that's, you know, as I was saying to Ty, that's one of the things I've learned from him talking to me about covering pro football. You know, there's a lot of guys that don't. Patrick is a guy who's seriously digs. Craig's a guy who seriously digs and wants to understand the story. And do I agree with them all the time? No, but I respect their opinion because it's a highly informed opinion. And that really is what we try and do. You know, I know it's what Todd is dedicated to do, and it's why I take an hour out of my week to go on with you guys. you know, it's really put in the effort to really understand the issues and be able to talk about them and think them through. We don't have to all agree, right? We don't have to be red hat, blue hat. And in fact, in Wisconsin, like I said with Ty, we need to be green and gold because that's how this state can be great. So to Camilla, talking a little bit about Evers Johnson voters, right? One of the things that I have on occasion talked about, I talk about it every time I'm on, right? Because when you do what I do, it's always good to spend time talking to people that you know really well, their whole story, to understand how they're thinking. Most of my buddies were Evers Johnson voters. There were about 42,000 of them in the state of Wisconsin based on our math last time. And they will be central to deciding the next election. In fact, I just got done doing a survey fairly recently in Wisconsin. About 60% of the undecided voters currently in the state of Wisconsin between Donald Trump and Joe Biden are Evers Johnson voters. How did they vote for Evers and Johnson? Both in the polling, you know, which is quantitative data, and the qualitative of talking to my buddies. You know, Evers ran a good campaign in terms of reminding people, but it really was much more a referendum on Tim Michaels. When you have somebody talking about, we're never going to lose another election again, election denial, those kinds of things, communicating to the base, it really was something that they went against. But in the survey data that I've done, you know, Mandela Barnes ran as a progressive and did not really apologize from it. My buddies really didn't like Ron Johnson, but there were just too many things, like the defund the police tweets, the campaigning with Bernie Sanders, that said to them, this guy's just too liberal. He doesn't get me and what I care about. And I would rather vote for the guy who's kind of a jerk, Ron Johnson, than the guy who doesn't get me. If it had been Tammy Baldwin or some other candidate against Ron Johnson, I think it would have been a very different race.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of what I've gathered from my time working here at Civic Media and getting to know a lot more people in politics is that a lot of those voters just consider themselves to be more common sense voters, rather than thinking of themselves as a party. And that felt like common sense at the time, whether or not it turned out great, because, you know, Ron Johnson is Ron Johnson. It made sense.
Yeah, it made sense to them because they viewed Ron Johnson. They didn't view Ron Johnson as a MAGA. They viewed him more as traditional Republican leaning MAGA. And Mandela Barnes was seen, when you get out past, you know, the Dells and North, voters there, rightly or wrongly, you have a higher bar that you have to pass that you get it if you're from Madison or Milwaukee. And Tammy Baldwin, most of my buddies voted for Tammy Baldwin. Why? Because Tammy Baldwin showed up in Hudson and River Falls and, you know, word spread quick that she went in and drank a beer with a bunch of people and she is okay. She wasn't one of those Dane County people, right? But Mandela never really was able to convey that. And that, you know, that Ron Johnson was drinking beers with people.
And the negative advertising against Mandela Barnes certainly did not help either. So there was a lot of that took what he said about the police out of context. So,
but you know, that goes with the game though.
Right.
Right. Like if you have that stuff in your background, it's why, you know, people say if you're going to be a candidate for office, you can lie to your wife. You can lie to a lot of people, but don't lie to your political consultant because the stuff's going to come out and it's going to come out in the worst possible light. If you're honest about it, you can have it come out in a better light. With that, I want to go to, speaking of experts, Mark from Prairie du Sac knows more about maps than any listener that I've encountered on any of the podcasts and other stuff I do around the country. So I want to invite Mark from DeSac to come on and pass along what he was thinking in terms of the conversation with Craig. Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. And Rod Johnson's not only a jerk, he's also a criminal jerk for his actions on the electors thing. That
you know what, Mark? If you listen to me on a podcast where I can use different language, I usually use something different there. But I always have to put a post-it note on my screen that reminds me I can't use certain words on the radio. So.
Yeah, and I do that as well when I'm on the air because I could get very colorful because I know a lot of colorful language as well.
Tell me your take on the maps. What's going on with the maps, Mark?
Well, I haven't been able to see the. I've been trying to find the maps for that was submitted by Will and by the Republicans. And I've been wondering. You know, I've gotten hints that they didn't even bother to go. To obey the whole contiguous and compact. You know that you're supposed. How the districts are supposed to be bounded? Because I've seen comments out there. Well, when they draw those maps up, they should be splitting up the wards and the towns, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. Those things are the criteria under the Constitution. Are supposed to be the basis on how these maps are formed, that and based on population. And I wonder if, you know, I don't know that I want to see them. I'm wondering if they should just be take all the past voting results out of it and just base it on where the populations are and where the population is to base those maps on. Because in my mind, that's how they should be drawn. They shouldn't be, you know, if Dane County has to become separate districts, you mean that based on population. Then that's how it has to be, and then you have to go down to go down to the ward lines and town lines, and for example, that it should simply be based on population. And unfortunately, like in Milwaukee County, or the city of Milwaukee, because of past policies that put African Americans in certain communities, that's where those people are right now. You know, even though that has changed now. So the maps are going to reflect their political influence in that way as well, rather than say, well, this is where, you know, look at the racial components of these districts. And I don't know if I'm making myself, if I'm.
No, you are. Here's the thing, Mark, so redistricting, having been a part of that process at certain times, the evolution of technology is what's changed redistricting, because you can basically enter into software, draw me the most Republican or Democratic maps you can draw. And that really is part of the problem.
And I think that mentioning splitting up Dane County also brings to mind, we've had some other callers before express that they feel the problem is not necessarily the gerrymandering. Obviously, that's an issue, but that it's a symptom of a lack of representation, that our districts just have too many people in them, that we need to make things smaller, and that it's hard to adequately express the needs of everybody in Wisconsin with our current number of districts.
Yeah, and I think the key thing here is that... So as Craig was talking about, right, the Democratic vote is more clustered in Dane and Milwaukee. That said, you know, the maps don't have to be a situation where, you know, they are today, where Democrats would need to win effectively 56% of the vote statewide to win a majority. That's clearly not fair, and those are clearly maps that are skewed. You know, at the end of the day, the key thing is how many competitive districts are there that will represent change within the electorate in terms of how they see things. And here's the good news. I mean, I think Wisconsin is headed to a place where they're going to have better maps. But I also think it's important that Democrats recognize that, you know, they don't have a single legislator north of Highway 8. And some of that isn't just maps. Some of that is you have to be able to resonate with those voters. And that's about the kind of candidates you're putting up and the kinds of things that they're talking about. And if you don't have candidates that fit the district politically and, you know, connect, in the kind of environment that we're in, you're really going to struggle regardless of what those maps look like. And that is the challenge that, we have. I'm Trygve Olsen. You're listening to the Todd Abaw Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I got you, babe. I got you, babe.
News, talk, and sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s, time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
You're listening to News, Talk, and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is pitiful. 1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat. What a hype. Sound like they used to mean something in this town. They used to pull the hog out and they used to eat it. You're hypocrites, all of you.
Welcome back to the Todd Abaw Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Trygve Olsen, sitting in for Todd today. We're on the final lap here, Mr. Zommers. We're almost done. Our weekend can start.
And we got a little weather forecast from Groundhog Day from Bill Murray. Maybe he's been around the day a couple, two, three times at this point, and a little frustrated with life.
That is a cult classic. And honestly, what a national treasure Bill Murray is.
Oh, definitely.
And, you know, I was thinking about this. Have you, and I shared it with my daughters who are age 14 and 12. Have you ever seen Zombieland? With Woody Harrelson and the guy who was in the Facebook movie, what is it, Social Network?
Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe there's two of those, and I saw the second one, but not the first one somehow.
Oh, you got to see the first one because Bill Murray's in the first one. They go to Bill Murray's house.
Right.
Bill Murray is one of the few human beings alive because he's been masquerading as a zombie. And they inadvertently shoot him.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. But Bill Murray, a national treasure. Groundhog's Day is one of the great, great movies.
Caddyshack is also awesome.
Caddyshack.
I think I saw that movie on TV when I was maybe a little too young to have seen Caddyshack.
Really? So, you know, when I was maybe middle school, high school, well, we had junior high then, not middle school. We used to rent Caddyshack and watch it on VHS all the time.
I haven't seen it.
But then again, remember, I'm the guy who's going with my buddies from River Falls to see Night Ranger in concert with Rat in Vegas. Right?
It should be a great time, I'm sure. But
oh yeah, Rat and Roll, baby. You didn't even know who Rat was.
No, I did not.
But you knew Night Ranger.
I at least knew Sister Christian, and I forgot who we were talking about the last time you brought it up, but yeah.
Well, that's the thing. You know what? That's why you and I need to figure out a platform from which we can talk about music, because the cross-pollination, right? We could talk some about cult classic movies too. And I bet we could get listeners in. I bet Mark from Prairie to Sack is a Caddyshack fan too.
We could always get.
Sounds like.
Yeah, I feel like he has brought in Bill Murray quotes before or texted them in.
Well, you know, there's a piece of how insane things have gotten that Bill Murray quotes probably fit our politics pretty well at the moment. I think that that's the case, really.
Speaking of which, Carmela from Milwaukee texted in, thanking you for clarifying in further detail about the split vote, that she abhors Senator Johnson and could not understand how an individual could vote for Evers and Johnson because they're polar opposites politically. But yeah.
Well, I could tell her about my friends who voted for Tony Evers, refused to vote for Ron Johnson, and then voted for Derek Van Orten. And that probably would really get her going, given that Derek Van Odwan was literally at the Capitol on January 6th. And unlike Ron Johnson, he didn't have an official reason to be there. So, yeah, it's I hear you. But, you know, it just is, you know, Wisconsin, and it's part of what makes Wisconsin such a great place. I mean, as listeners know, I love the state of Wisconsin. I intend to be back there more as I get older. I have, you know, my kids are sort of anchored in the schools, and that ends up playing a role. But part of what makes Wisconsin such a special place, and I say this having been, you know, all over the world and across a lot of the U.S., and Ty and I were talking about this a little bit, you know, the diversity of Wisconsin and the friendliness of people in Wisconsin is something incredibly unique. And Todd and I talk about that quite a bit. You know, like, we can't let our politics wreck that. The political divisions have answers that we can find. But if you lose that element that makes Wisconsin so special, that's a tragedy, real tragedy.
Yeah, and I'm sure going into this election, we're definitely reaching a boiling point that is much higher than I thought the boiling point could ever be. And hopefully things can start to normalize, but I guess we'll have to see.
Yes. Now, it's Friday, and when Mr. Albaugh called me on the red phone this morning saying, here's my last pieces of wisdom before you fly the plane, he said that you have a game that you are going to play. Are you playing it with me? I didn't fully understand this. Do I have to guess the game?
No, I'm just going to tell everybody about it. So here okay. we go. Here we are again with the board game of the week for February 2nd. So my last board game of the week was Root, a game where you play as different woodland creatures and it is and try to vie for control of the forest. It's the most complicated game I've talked about. I'm going to follow that up with the simplest game that I've talked about for board game of the week, and that is Kirii the Duel, spelled K-I-R-I-A-I colon the Duel. As the name suggests, it's two players. And it takes about 5 minutes. The game consists of somewhere around, I believe it was 16 cards when I counted it, and it fits in a pocket. Basically, the premise is each player is a samurai, and you're in a duel to the death. And just like a real sword fight would be, one or two cuts and it's over, which is why the game is so short. So your cards for your samurai are positioned different spots away from each other, and you choose what you're going to do. You have cards in your hands for different kinds of strikes or movements, and you reveal it at the same time. The movement happens first, and then the strikes, and you might cling your swords off of each other, or you might hit the other person. And it's really easy to learn and really quick. And that is this week's board game of the week. It is about $15. You can find it online. I don't know if it's in a lot of game stores yet because it's a very new game.
I'm going to have you send this to me. This sounds like a game for my younger daughter and I to play because she would like nothing better than taking dad down with a samurai sword at some points, well, given she's 12 years old. Yeah, you need to shoot me an email. That is an awesome tip.
So yes, Kirii awesome the Duel tip. Is the board game of the week.
Mr. Zomers, you got any big plans for the weekend?
Not particularly. Probably just going to stay home. One of my roommates is sick, and I'm hoping I don't get sick. Been taking extra vitamins and everything, but I'm just not going to go out. I don't want to get anybody else sick in case I end up getting something.
That is probably good advice. I'm going to try and get over my bronchitis. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It has been a great pleasure working with you, Mr. Zomers. Matt Flynn Direct is coming up next. This has been the Todd Albaugh Show. I'm Trigvi Olsen. Thanks for listening.
And whatever you're dreaming of, whatever you believe in, keep banging on your drum.
News, talk, and sports.
Talk about your triple play.
Get this guy a jockstrap and a cookie.
1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio. Refreshed.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. Biomarker testing was a turning point for me. By working with my oncologist, we were able to determine the most appropriate treatment plan. My fear was I wasn't going to be here to see my children grow up. That gave me hope, knowing that I have that chance. And I did. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Your home for the Packers. 1400 AM WRJN Racine, 99.9 FM W260CV Racine, and 98.1 FM W251BU Kenosha. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.